Well, these stories just don't get any sicker. In East St. Louis, Illinois, not too far from the cave, a judge ordered a psychological examination for a woman accused of killing a pregnant acquaintance and her fetus. 24-year-old Tiffany Hall looked very sullen as she appeared in an arraignment hearing via video conference from the St. Clair County Jail, where she's being held on a $5 million bond. Prosecutors say that she killed a 23-year-old person, her fetus, which had been cut from the woman's womb. And according to authorities, Tiffany Hall also told police she drowned the woman's three children, ages 7, 2, and 1, and stuffed them into a washer and dryer at the apartment they shared with their mother. Gee, and the woman has not yet been charged in the children's deaths. In a moment, our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast, Philip Carlo, one of his books, the latest out, The Iceman, Confessions of a Mafia Hitman. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Philip Carlo graduated from the School of Hard Knocks at 15. He witnessed a friend shot to death by hitmen from the Colombo crime family. At 17, he was involved in a gang fight and shot in the forehead by a .22 caliber gun. It was after this life-threatening moment that Carlo decided to turn his life around. Then, after 9 years as a successful real estate agent, he walked away with the goal of becoming a professional writer. His research into child abuse piqued his interest in abused children that grew into the abusers, the sociopaths. After corresponding with serial killers in prisons and visiting death rows, Carlo made a connection with Richard Ramirez, California's Night Stalker. While visiting with Ramirez at San Quentin's death row, Carlo decided to write an account of the case. The Night Stalker quickly became a bestseller, launching Carlo's career as an author. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Philip, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it.
George, it is so my pleasure. It is so so great to be back with you, actually.
Yeah, it has been a while for us. You know, Philip, the story that I used to lead into you that occurred in East St. Louis, Illinois, where a woman kills another woman, cuts out her fetus, and then, though she has not been charged, may ultimately be implicated in the deaths of three little kids and dumping them in the washer and dryer, for crying out loud.
Right.
What's going on with people, Philip?
Well, George, I mean, I think in this particular case, there's no ongoing pathology as such. In other words, it's just this one incident. I think basically what we're talking about is a woman that just went nuts. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that it was a crack-induced or some kind of drug-induced psychosis. And like I say, the real telling of the degree of her insanity, her evil, is whether or not this was just one incident. And apparently it was just that one incident. Although it's pretty extreme, George, doing what you just described is no easy task. It's not like you see on television where the knife just goes in and the cut is that easy. It's very difficult to do what you just described. And the killing of three children, she had to be possessed in some way with some form of insanity. Although, unfortunately, we're hearing of these types of incidences, i.e., women who just lose it and kill their children. We have, of course, the case where the woman drowned her five children.
Right.
And was recently diagnosed as being not fit to stand trial. So I think it's more a matter of mental illness than almost a criminality, if you would, George. Unlike, for instance, a serial killer, where they cunningly stalk and plan heinous crimes over a period of time, sometimes as many as 30, 40 years. Most recently, we have a good example of that type of pathology in the BTK killer, who is an individual that for nearly 40 years was stalking, planning, and killing torturing and killing human beings. Dennis Radar, his name was.
And he fit right into his neighborhood. Nobody would have known.
Everyone was so shocked, George, and that's the way it always is with these guys. That's one of the reasons why I found them so interesting, and it's something that drew me to it, because it's a matter of really understanding that you can't just look at these guys and know that what they're capable of. They hide who they really are extremely well, as you just made the point. This guy was the pillar of the community, deacon of his church, the head of the church, had a nice job, was loved by his neighbors, family. Supposedly his wife had no idea about what he was really into. But he was actually, with regard to children, he was hanging children by wire, by their necks. And I know, George, some of the things we're going to talk about are very unpleasant, but one of the reasons why I love being with you is that I can tell the truth about what the truth is. And in this case, the truth was we're dealing with a severe sexual sadist who was actually getting aroused, sexually aroused, by these heinous acts. And they were also perpetrated against children. And he would then go on to relive it, as they know, as we know, in law enforcement, the acts, i.e., writing letters about them, drawings of them, and reliving them and masturbating as he thought about them. I mean, the degree of this sickness goes to that far. And what's so scary about those types of people is that how well they plan what they're going to do, and they don't get caught. I mean,
for their acts, they are almost genius at what they do, sadly enough.
Exactly. I mean, in a sense, George, they are genius. He got himself caught by he couldn't leave well enough alone. His taunting of the cops, which is another aspect of his. I hope he's listening now.
Letters did him in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, he stupidly sent a DVD that had his name on it, and he didn't realize it. It connected to the church, and his name was on it, and they got him immediately. But the cops had no idea it was him. They were absolutely clueless. And in fact, when he was uncovered for being the monster everyone was looking for, everyone was so shocked. I mean, he looked like Mr. Magoo. You'd never in a million years think he was even remotely capable of such thoughts, let alone such acts.
His ego did him in.
In a sense, but it's even more complicated and deeper than that, George, because that taunting of the police made him feel that he was really omnipotent, and he was godlike, and he could never be caught. And that was part and parcel of his pathology. It's quite possible, George, he's listening right now, because they have access to AM radio, and they often stay up all night long in jail. They reverse everything. They sleep during the day, and they stay up at night.
Well, and Philip, I get letters from inmates,
right.
And have a huge audience. I believe, boy, if they ever got rating books, we'd have a 90 share in some of these prisons.
Well, if he is listening, I'd like to tell him I wish he'd go out in general population, because the population will treat him like the low-life scumbag that he is, and they'd make sure justice is served. It's interesting, George, because jails are jungles. Jails are the place where we keep the animals that are out of control. We literally have to keep them in cages, and they are. But in jail...
But they're not all animals, though, Philip. Some of them have done stupid things in their life
I'm sure
they regret. Right?
I'm talking about the out-of-control, violent individuals.
Yeah, okay. All right, I'm with you.
And even in that place, guys like Dennis Rader are not tolerated. Guys like Dennis Rader are not put up with. Guys like Dennis Rader are beaten to death. The guys like Dennis Rader, child killers, rapers of women, are not looked on kindly, and they're beaten to death. You know, we did a show a while back about predator priests in the Catholic Church.
Right.
And there was a year and a half ago, not to get off the subject, but there was this pedophile priest named John Gagan.
Out of Boston, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he wasn't in jail a year, and a prisoner got in the cell, bound him with socks, stuffed a sock in his mouth, tied him, and proceeded to quite literally beat him to death. And that's my point. I mean, it's the criminals will not tolerate these scumbags, and they make sure justice is served. You know, it's one in the Bible. It says those that would abuse a child will have a rock tied to the neck and thrown in the river. And even there, it's being laid down that you at some point you've got to draw the line and just make sure that justice is served quickly and for sure. Unfortunately, George, all too often these types of people fall through the cracks, fall through the system, as in the case of Dennis Radar, how for so many years he was successful, as in the case of the BTK killer, the Green River killer,
right?
Who also for 30 years they couldn't catch him. He was leaving bodies all over the place. The point at which he had 52 victims.
Didn't Ted Bundy help find that guy?
Exactly. Well, he called him the River Man, and he first made the cops cognizant of the fact that it's not that there are clusters. That if they look more carefully, wherever they found any given body, they'll find more bodies because he's leaving them in clusters. And they did do that, and they did find more bodies, and Bundy was right on the money. Bundy also, George, is a very good example of the clever pathology of these individuals, how they plan meticulously not to get caught. And that's what makes them so dangerous, and that's why it's so important for people like you, George, to give access to the media. But people like me who study these individuals, who are trying to show what they're really like, who are trying to basically shine light in this dark, dark place. It's not, and George, it's so interesting because it's not really just about the bodies. It's not just about their crimes. It really should be about, and this is what we'll talk about, how they get that way, how a Ted Bundy is made. What makes Dennis Radar? Are they made? Are they born that way? These are the questions that we have to address, and if I may, I'll talk to them.
Absolutely, and as we evolve into this discussion tonight, Philip, you know, hitmen, I mean, I want to talk with you about that because are they different from a serial killer? Because do they show emotion? How many people do they bump off? And, I mean, how could someone do that and not feel any feeling? And maybe they do feel feeling. You'll tell us about that. But let me ask you this, Philip.
Please.
Is there something going on in this country right now that is creating this apparent surge in violence? Or has this been going on since the beginning of time?
Well, it's a combination. It's a fusion of several factors, George, one of which is, of course, it's been going on since the beginning of time. Crime, heinous crime, terrible crime. Comparatively speaking, what's going on in modern times pales to what happened in the medieval eras, the Spanish Inquisition. The whole concept of werewolves was basically serial killers. Your listeners need to understand this. The contrivance of werewolves was really men who were serial killers and killing the victims and tearing their throats out and ripping their bodies apart and leaving them so mangled and torn up that it appeared as though an animal had done that, certainly not a human being. And nobody's mind could wrap around what they were seeing. So they made up this folklore, this myth that it was half man, half wolf that did that. They couldn't accept the responsibility of a human being capable of something like that. I think to some degree that's also what happened with vampires, i.e. people who were obsessed with the drinking of blood and would go out and do that. And it could be, you know, the local shoemaker. It could be the local jeweler who once a month or every 2 months had a pension to do that. And when they found the body and the throat was torn open and clearly blood had been drawn out, they had to conjure up some kind of monster that did that. Certainly a human being couldn't do that.
As I've always said, Philip, that reality is scarier than fiction. I would prefer to think that there were werewolves out there or vampires. To think that actual human beings are doing these things, that's scarier.
It actually, you're right, and unfortunately, it's all throughout history. So there is really is an ongoing pathology. It's not really just a phenomenon that's a byproduct of modern times. But to answer your question, George, there are now the last 5-6 years there has been an upsurge in felony crimes, in violent crimes, in rapes. And I think there are some reasons that contribute to what's going on, and basically it has to do with lack of funding for boots on the street for cops under the Clinton administration. For whatever anyone wants to say about his administration, he made a lot of money available for extra police in every state in the country. And all those extra feet on the street, as they say, help drive down crime. The crack epidemic came to an end. That helped drive down the statistics. What's helping to drive up the statistic is the funds, the federal money that was available for extra police that's been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we have a lot of people are talking about the immigration problem. I should say the illegal immigration problem, but they don't really quite know what's going on, and I do. Out of every 1,000 illegal immigrants that come over, we get 100, 150, 10 to 15% that are a criminal element, that in their own countries they were committing crimes. And they come here, and because we're such an open, free society, they have free access, free reign to us, at us. And they commit violent crimes. These are the types of individuals that, when they're sober, but they seem okay, but they look around, they see wealth, they see people driving nice cars. They don't understand that the people that they see with the money driving nice cars, they worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
They it was a matter of blood and sweat.
Well, most of them worked hard. Some of them probably pillaged other people to get to where they are.
Well, yeah, but for the most part, we're all about working hard and being successful. Your success is generally a byproduct of hard work. Yes, of course, we'll talk about the mafia in great detail tonight. They don't do that. But I guess to some degree they work hard, too. They put their lives on the line. The point is they start feeling jealous. They start feeling envy. And that soon turns to something else, a hatred. They have a drink, a couple of drinks, and the next thing you know, they think they have free reign to do whatever they want, and they do.
But see, that's also, though, my point, Philip. I believe that there is more hatred going on today than there was years ago.
On a sociological point of view, absolutely. Part of that has to do with we're being... there's an infusion of an element that we didn't have before, George, and it's these illegal immigrants. The numbers are staggering. The amount of them that are coming over the border are staggering. It's not just Mexicans. It's Central America. It's all of South America, and there's millions every year, and they are becoming part and parcel of our society. There is no check and balance. There's no one at the border stopping them, number one. Number two, when they get here, they could do whatever they want. Even if they're caught, an illegal immigrant's caught, they're not even sent back. They're not even frightened of that anymore. And I'm certainly, and I know there's some people listening to this out there, and they're getting angry at me because I'm blaming it on them. I'm not blaming it on them. I'm blaming it on the people who are coming here illegally and doing criminal acts. It's the large numbers of them that is alarming, that I'm concerned with, that is not being addressed by law enforcement, either on the federal, state, or city level.
All right, stay with us, Philip. More in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest tonight, Philip Carlo, his website, philipcarlo.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at some of his work. his investigative work. We'll be back with him as we talk more about the mind of a killer on Coast to Coast AM. Philip, all the work you've done, of course, you did this one with Richard Ramirez, California's Night Stalker. That had to have been a bizarre connection for you.
Well, I mean, bizarre is not quite the word, George. for your listeners' benefit, Richard Ramirez was a serial killer who terrorized Los Angeles in the mid-1980s. He was dubbed the Night Stalker by the press. And that monkey was a very, very appropriate because he came out at night and he stalked the night. He wore all black, very cunning, very motivated, very driven. And basically, he was convicted of entering homes, 19 different incidences in the middle of the night, raping and killing women and their husbands. And it went on for 14 months. Every cop in Los Angeles was looking for this guy. They couldn't capture him. And ultimately, he was brought down in August of 85, convicted in 1989. I met him in 92 in San Quentin's death row. I first communicated with him via mail. He agreed to meet with me. I met with him. And he was very, he was surprised, I was surprised at how grounded he was, for want of a better way to put it. Not a monster, congenial, polite, funny, I would venture to say a gentleman. That's the person I met. I didn't meet the person on the street. I think when these guys get arrested, they become institutionalized. They mellow out as such. But you mentioned Ted Bundy before. It's the same type of thing. These individuals have a duality about them. On the one hand, they can be the nicest guy in the world, somebody you'd want as a neighbor, maybe somebody you'd want as a friend, actually somebody you would want as a friend. But they have this other hidden dark side that they manage to mask so well from people that know them, people that are close to them, and society at large. And that's what makes them so dangerous. That's what makes them so scary.
Unpredictable. Could these be demons in these people, Philip? I mean, actual true demons, the demons that we've known about for years, the
right.
demons from hell that somehow have possessed these people and at any given time can literally take them over?
Well, if anyone was ever possessed, it was Richard Ramirez. He was a Satanist, an avowed Satanist. He drew pentagrams on victims' bodies on the wall in blood. During his trial, there were some outbursts where he stood up and yelled out, "Hail Satan." He had a pentagram drawn in his hand, which he showed the media, which scared the hell out of people because he wasn't faking it. He wasn't acting that way. But George, I've done a lot of research into this. In that incident down in Matamoros, Mexico, where they found all those bodies on the Santa Elena Ranch, Adolfo Constanzo sacrificed 13 people. I traveled to Brazil. I traveled to Haiti. I interviewed people who were involved in human sacrifice, who were committing human sacrifice. And I know of what I talk, and what I think this is all about is you can't blame it on some evil entity. You can't blame it on, generally speaking, on people being possessed. Even in the case of Richard Ramirez, I think that's all just a guise. I think it's a contrivance. I think the Satan is a man-made contrivance to blame everyone but the people who are responsible for the actual crimes. That's not to say that there aren't evil spirits, quote-unquote. That's not to say that there aren't ghosts. But I think 99% of the heinous crimes that we're witnessing are just people who were either born with an inclination that way or were severely abused as children, or any combination of the two that makes them. I've interviewed over 15 incarcerated serial killers, George, and not one of them was possessed. What they all were was extreme sexual sadists. What motivated them, what drove them, was killing people. That was their sunset, their sunrise. That is air, that is food, that is sustenance. As hard as this might be to hear, it's the truth. It's the hardcore truth. Your listeners need to know that. Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy, Richard Ramirez, Jack the Ripper. They all came from the same mold. And that mold is basically, the long and the short of it, is sexual sadism. All of them had sex with their victims.
All of them
ejaculated. But again, George, to answer your question, in my opinion, it's just broken machines. It's human beings that have gone the wrong way. You mentioned before my latest book, The Iceman. This guy's name was Richard Kuklinski. HBO did 3 60-minute documentaries on him because what he was saying and what he was about was so unusual and so different. He talked about murder. He murdered, George, over 200 people. But he talked about murder with a cold candidness that we've never quite heard before, and an evil sincerity, if you would, that we never heard before.
Did he get paid for this, Philip? Obviously.
Oh, well, you know, if I may, George, my point was he was severely abused as a child, and that this is not to offer up an excuse for bad behavior, but with most of them, I've discovered via my sitting down and talking with them, via looking at the statistics, most of these guys on death row, most of these guys capable of severe brutality without any guilt, any remorse, no conscience, were severely abused in the formative years, in the building block years, three to nine, those times when we need nurturing and love and tactile touch, pleasant touch. They're being whipped and brutalized and sodomized, and they grow up very angry, George, and that anger, they turn on their fellow man. They look left and they look right, and they don't see neighbors. They see victims, potential victims. They become carnivores. They become jungle predators. And I think essentially, and it might sound like an oversimplification, but it really is this simple. It's beaten into them. In the case of Kuklinski, when he was just 5 years old, he saw his father beat to death his older brother, who was 7. The father was brutalized, his 2 sons, Richard and Florian, ultimately beat Florian to death. It was a poor family. It was in Jersey City. He was put in a cheap pine coffin, and Richard would stand by the coffin in the 2 days during the morning and beg for his brother to wake up, but he never woke up. He didn't understand what death was. He thought he was sleeping. This, he's telling me, is a 67-year-old man. And then ultimately, the father let him alone for a while, but soon he went back to his old ways and beat the boy and whipped the boy and hit the boy and knocked him out. And basically, he beat into Richard what he became. He beat sympathy. He beat empathy out of him.
Yes.
By the time he was 10 years old, he was filled with hatred.
And who beat it out of the father? Somebody else must have done that to him.
Well, exactly right, George. Of course, it is always about a cycle. And it's talking like we are now that ultimately can break the cycle, because there are ways to remedy it. And needless to say, we've changed a lot since Kuklinski was a child. He was born in 1935. This murder occurred in 1940. There was no real setup for child abuse back then. There is now. The school systems are much more aware of how to recognize severely abused children, how to get them out of homes. Unfortunately, the system still fails miserably, but it's gotten much better than it was back
then. Well, let me ask you this, Philip, with regards to serial killers.
Yes.
This is going to be a kind of a twofold question. Question one, of course, is if you have 10 serial killers, how many do you believe were abused as children?
10. Well, now, question.
Okay. All right. Now, the next question is if you had 10 abused children, how many will turn out to be serial killers?
That's a really, really good question. And there are factors that come into play that mitigate what they become, i.e., at some point they get love. At some point they got a therapy. At some point they manage to grab themselves by their bootstraps and go in another direction. And that doesn't, and they should be proud of it. They should be glad and they should be honored for it. But that doesn't take away the fact that another, let's say two children in the same household, let's say Rich's brother didn't get killed and he grew up and he went on to become a successful businessman. Well, praise be to him. But the fact that Richard wasn't able to, for whatever reason or reasons, to get past what had done to him, mm-hmm. in a sense, you can't blame him because it happened to him at an age when he couldn't file correctly what was being done to him. That's the tragedy of child abuse. The fact that it happens when the child cannot classify, cannot file it in such a way that they learn how to deal with it, and they ultimately become overwhelmed with it, and they end up becoming caught up in antisocial behavior, sociopaths, which metamorphosizes into psychopaths. And once they get to that level, they're a danger. Who are they a danger to? They're a danger to us. So to answer your question, it's mitigating circumstances that come into play that direct the severely abused child on a path away from destruction. It might be at some point they were taken over by their grandparents, or a child was taken out of the home of the abuser and the grandparents or a loving aunt, or the church might have been seceded in a good way. But the point is, they were taken off that merry-go-round. That's what I think the bottom line is.
But he may have loved, someone may have loved the grandparents, but they may have still been serial killers. They may have killed other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And how many serial killers, mass murderers, do you think are walking around the United States right now? They're not caught. We don't know who they are, but they're all over the place. How many of them?
Well,
on any active basis?
You know, I've heard a lot of different numbers. According to the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit, at any given time, there's on the average 500 of them.
500 of them?
Yeah.
And how many people on the average then do you think they may have killed, each one?
Well,
5, 10 people, what?
It's hard to say because the fever, the homicidal fever that these people become inflicted with varies. As an example, in Ramirez's case, there were incidences where he was convicted of 2 and 3 attacks a night. Then in the case of a John Wayne Gacy, for your listeners' benefit, John Wayne Gacy was the killer clown. He was a homosexual serial killer whose penchant was for teenage boys. The point at which he was arrested, he had 48 bodies buried in the basement of his home. And he did that over a 20-year period. So it varies with each one of them. But and then they change. They might, like the BTK killer, he had basically 8 victims over a 40-year period. Now, those are the only victims we know about. I never take their word for the amount of victims they really had. I think they lie to their teeth. I can't trust them. I know for a fact that Ted Bundy had a lot more victims than he was suspected of. I know for a fact that Richard Ramirez had a lot more victims than he was convicted of. And it goes on and on and on. We see, George, part of the problem is this. What these guys are learning is how not to get caught. It is the biggest lie that they subconsciously leave clues, that they really want to get caught.
Right, yeah.
That is a misnomer. That is so not true. The only regret they ever have when they do get caught is that they were caught. They love what they're doing. Their world evolves around doing that. When they're not doing it, they think about doing it. They plan it.
They plan it how far in advance?
Way, way in advance. If I may give an excellent example of the degree to which they planned it, Ted Bundy actually went and had a cast made for his arm that he could slip on and slip off for his left arm, and he would walk. He had a Volkswagen Bug. He took the passenger seat out of the Volkswagen Bug, parked it on or near a campus, and he'd walk on the block where his car was. He purposely picked a quiet block, a block that was particularly dark, and in the cast he had a tire iron. And he'd be walking with 10, 15 books, and when he saw a likely suspect, a woman that fit his victim group, he dropped the books at the appropriate time, and many women said, gee, can I help you?
They felt sorry for him. They look at the cast.
Sure, sure, please do. And, yeah, my car's right here. That's so nice of you. And he would start talking to them. And that moment, he plotted it. He planned it. He rehearsed it. His facial details, the smile on his face, the set of his body, all spoke of a man that was harmless. Sure, you can trust me. No problem. Thank you so much for helping me. When really, what we're looking at here is a true wolf in sheep's clothing. Yeah, you know, gets over to the car, opens the passenger side. Would you be kind enough to put the books in the car? Gee, thank you so much. This is so sweet of you, so nice of you. You know, people aren't like that anymore. They don't really stop to help. And the moment that they bent over to put in the car,
bang,
he'd whip out that tire iron, crack them in the head, knock them out, get them in the car, bind them quickly, and then drive off and took them to an area he had planned, he had staked out, he had weapons there, he had rope there, he had methods to torture them there. He bound them, and he did his thing. And that's the degree to which they plan it. It is very rarely haphazard. Also, I've got to hark back to the BTK killer. Look how well he planned what he did. He dressed himself up in the uniform that he wore, i.e. he was a city inspector, and in that guise, he was able to drive around the neighborhood, go into people's homes, and what he was doing was really looking for likely victims. And I have to also use the example. We're talking now about predators, sexual predators in general, not just serial killers, although the two examples I just used were of serial killers. But, George, as we've discussed before, pedophiles dressing up as priests and
true,
entering the church. These are guys who are highly motivated.
Because, and I believe like you do, Philip, they were pedophiles before they were priests.
Oh, absolutely. These are people that were obsessed pedophiles that joined the church because they knew they'd have be protected, have a roof over their head, and free access to children, and that the church would ultimately always protect them, always opt on the side of their reputation and never opt on the side of the children. And that's why they joined the church en masse. If you see all the men who are arrested for child molestation in the church, they're all elderly individuals in their 70s. And that tells us that they were in the seminars in the late 50s and the 60s. But I'm
stay with us.
Them-
Got to take this break. We'll be right back.